Pleased to have another chat with State Representative Tacky Chan of Quincy during this coronavirus pandemic, as we're all still working remotely from home, to get an update on what's happening at the state level and the local level as well. Tacky, great to see you again, virtually, as it were.
No, thank you again, Joe. I'm back in my dining room and dressed casually because I suspect most of us are fairly casual at home. So I love your tie. I can accommodate this time.
Yeah, try and change it up and keep some sense of normalcy, at least, even though I'm in your home office here as well. I think last time we chatted, your mom was making lunch in the kitchen. So.
Yeah, she's moved over to the TV room to watch the 12 o'clock news. So it's what today is, the 17th, is it?
Yes.
Noontime of the 17th today. So the days start to blend as I'm kind of discovering. But I am wearing a shirt. I do have pants on. And I'm not wearing my jammies today. So unless you want to see me in my jammies, then obviously I will accommodate.
No, that'll be a different show for a different time. So what kind of would you like to bring us up to date on, I guess, first of all, what's happened on Beacon Hill this week?
Well, this week we passed a housing moratorium, which is actually fairly complex, but we'll try to summarize here. Basically prohibits landlords from evicting residential dwellings that are non-essential, meaning the building itself is non-essential building. And it's a moratorium for 45 to 120 days or the length of the state of emergency, depending on the time frame. And the governor can extend that time period beyond the state of emergency for up to 120 days, I believe, on their own. Stuff has to be done in writing, you know, documented regarding the circumstances, and it's all COVID related. So if you're financially impacted by COVID-19, you know, this would cover you. If you're not impacted by COVID-19, then it wouldn't. So for example, in my circumstance, I would not be impacted. But if you've been laid off or furloughed or a self-employed or a contractor otherwise impacted by COVID-19, you can demonstrate that in writing. You indicate that the landlord can't evict you. But on a compromise, the landlord can't take your last month's rent. Renters, obviously, you know, in the law, pays first month, last month, and security deposit. So they can take your money on the last month's rent, but you still have to reverse interest on return of some of those funds. So we're trying to create a balancing act here. I know it's very rough on landlords too, because, you know, mortgages to pay. There's some also relief coming regarding debt collecting of mortgages, which will apply to small businesses. And hopefully we'll include that to landlords as part of our discussion. But there is discussion about more expansion about those type of moratoriums, which of course leads to a burden to banks, which we're not also we are sensitive to that too. I mean, it's this ripple effect that we all know. But I mean, everyone's facing tough times. And if you do evict, whether it be a business or a resident, let's be frank about this. Who are you going to replace it with? Because people finding a new renter is extremely challenging. This fear about COVID-19 in residential dwellings and businesses, that creates that negative news and stigmatization. I've seen this before in SARS, when the last visit to Hong Kong in 2003. Whole businesses and residential dwellings were not visited because whether it be a rumor or reality of a SARS outbreak or a SARS resident in that property. So we're very sensitive to the issue. It's a very tough balancing act. And when you start factoring all these other things involved on rentals and the impact on the entire debt of the world, we're working hard trying to strike those balancing acts. We're also providing teleconference for mortgage assistance for renters. So that's part of the conversation as well. As you may have also seen in the news, the Senate passed a bill to reduce the signature count for this year's elections. It only applies to congressional and county seats. The Senate is looking to cut the numbers in half. So that means for U.S. Senate goes from 10,000 to 5,000, for congressional seat from 2,000 to 1,000, and for county seat from 1,000 to 500 certified signatures. Doesn't change the date of to file by the clerk, which is February 28th. So all your papers have to be by the clerk on February 28th. And in late May, I'm trying to remember, it's the Friday before Memorial Day. In late May is when you have to have your certified signatures filed with the Secretary of State's office. At the same time, there is a lawsuit going on from people running for U.S. Senate, Congress, and for state representative to ask the SJC for relief on signatures at all, or mm-hmm. electronic signatures, or reduction of signatures, or some combination. The most recent report was that the petitioner is looking for 2/3 a reduction on signatures. Secretary Galvin suggested 1/2. The SJC has looked at other states that has had a broad range of options. So that got expedited review. But given the fact that this is the 17th today and the clerk's office has to take papers by the 28th on the city and town clerk level, has to be there. You got about 10 days less than 10 days in counting, because Monday is a public holiday. Patriots Day is a public holiday. So that's another book you might have sent. Sitting in the House, our position, we have no official position in the House yet. It's under review and consideration. For state reps and state senators, that bill does not affect our level of seat, even though the Supreme Judicial Court is looking at the entire election structure right now. So, and the question about upcoming elections in the fall has not even been brokered yet at this time. The governor did sign into law a municipal relief bill to allow municipalities to delay the local elections. Obviously, we don't live in a city, town. We live in a city in Quincy, so we don't have to deal with spring elections and spring town meetings where a town would have to vote on their local budgets, elect their selectmen, and a myriad of other smaller offices in those towns, such as some places elect a towning board, planning board, some places elect a municipal light board of directors, and you know every community is very different. Mm-hmm. So we've moved from a town to Quincy. You're watching this online, you know what I'm talking about. We in Quincy don't experience that, so I'm not sure people actually know what I'm saying.
Yep, I think you're right. With the mayoral form of government, it's you know, it's very much a day-to-day operation. Things can happen much more quickly.
Yeah, and we also did a hearing this week with Ways and Means virtually. The House and Senate Chair, Chairman Rube Mekowitz, and Senate Chairman, Chairman Rodericks, and Administration Secretary Finance, all were together on a panel, sort of a kind of a sort of hearing, but not a hearing. It's more like an informational Q&A regarding our economists that we rely on a statewide level, ranging from Tufts University, UMass Dartmouth, the Beacon Hill Institute, Mass Taxpayer Foundation, Mass Budget and Policy. These guys do our numbers. The forecast is not very positive. They're projecting out perhaps 800 to a billion, a little over $1 billion short for fiscal 20, which is where we are now. We are also looking for next fiscal cycle anywhere between a $4 billion to as high as $6 billion short for fiscal 21. And not just income taxes, sales tax, obviously, and people are not about excise taxes for things like cars. Capital gains tax may be okay, maybe not okay. That's one of the moving targets because of the way the market is moving. The stock market's kind of all over the board. But fiscal year starts on July 1st. So whatever happens to the market today, it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to happen after fiscal year starts. And yeah. Obviously, transactions are slower now on selling homes, which is also a capital gain. So, and on the flip side, Moody's has looked at our current projections on Medicare, Medicaid. In the projections, Massachusetts is going to probably be close to $1 billion in new spending on just Medicare alone, mm-hmm. Medicaid, mm-hmm. the increase need as we go along.
Sure.
So FY21's outlook is not looking very rosy. People always say, you know, we have a $42, $45 billion budget. But I keep reminding people that, you know, 25 to 30%, depending on the year, is Medicare, Medicaid, or what we know as MassHealth. And local aid is approximately 16 to 18% of the budget, depending on the year. And we just implemented sweeping education reform that would increase funding to cities and towns, which then would shrink the other side of the budget. So, you know, most of government operates on 30%. Of what you see on the bottom line figure. And that's everything from state troopers to Department of Unemployment Insurance to DPH to Environmental Affairs. You know, it's everybody else, including our offices. So mm-hmm. we're looking at a pretty tough year. They also indicated to us that this projection does not include the July 15th filing deadline for taxes. That's a new projection. And they also warned us that the projections may shift on our daily numbers of COVID-19. and may change depending on what other stimulus packages may come down the road on the federal level.
That's what I wanted to ask you. Does the these deficit projections include the stimulus money from the federal government or no?
Some do, but most don't yet. So the additional stimulus money we got today being expended for COVID-19, as well as some assistance on Medicare, Medicaid, as well as our state budget for this fiscal cycle has been factored in yet. But like I said, the numbers may change positive or negative, but right. You know, maybe negative. Unemployment rate nationally, they're projecting somewhere between 17 and 18% nationally. Unemployment, as you see in the news, is record numbers of application filing, especially with the expanded program we have to include contractors, self-employed, people who have short-term jobs, didn't quite meet the contribution levels. But that's what ripples down to us. So the program expansion does reflect people never paid into the system. So mm-hmm. We're going to have a $1.7 trillion unemployment trust fund. And there's a projection that our total unemployment benefits, if nothing changes, may cost us $4.5 trillion just in Massachusetts alone.
Wow.
So that leaves a short-term loan opportunity from the federal government that we have to pay back over the course of many years, or maybe there'll be more federal assistance on that front. I'm sure that's something being considered in Washington and other states.
Okay.
But in terms of like state budget component, we're not terrible, but we're not great. We're kind of like the top 10 okay positions in the long term, but that's not a guarantee of anything either. And states that have huge rainy day funds, like Alaska, is oil-based. So the number that popped out on me on the Moody report, which again may change, they're looking at a 65% tax reduction. We're looking at an area of somewhere between 12 and 15% tax reduction.
Wow, okay, that's a stark difference, yeah.
Yeah, and some of the other states that have no tax is all, like our partners up in New Hampshire, mm-hmm. who has no sales tax, income tax. But they're looking at a Medicare, Medicaid increase too. And there's a population of about a million-ish people. But they're looking at, you know, $100 million increase in Medicare, Medicaid. And that, for a no-tax state, that's a lot of money.
Sure.
So, you know, we're somewhat fiscally better because we do have taxes that nobody likes to pay. I get mm-hmm. it. But without, you know, that funding, we wouldn't have a rainy day fund of $3.5 billion. We wouldn't have, put enough money into various programs that you are all needing, or you have a friend that's needing, given a high employment rate. For some examples is that there's still the rough estimate is about 45% of the workforce is still considered essential and out there in one form or another. 35% of the workforce is staying at home is the rough estimate. These numbers may again change.
Yeah.
The biggest impact on unemployment is the blue-collar and wage-working groups, as well as the self-employed and contractors and whatnot on that level. So, you know, it's really is the bulk of our economy at that end. And they also reminded us our two major stabilizing forces in our economy is healthcare and education. And we got some very sobering warnings about that part of our economy because our big three is healthcare, education, and tourism. Tourism should be self-explanatory at this point about what's going on. So
not a lot of tourism going to be happening, yeah.
No, I don't really have to explain that. The world economy suffering recession, as you can see worldwide, this pandemic has really crippled every country on the planet. So in healthcare, obviously that's the only industry doing major hires right now, like enormous amount of hires for the short term. Probably will have some stability in the long term, but it's going to be a phase in regarding returning of elective surgery, plus dealing with COVID-19 after we get past the major spike and down the other side of the curve. So that's big part of that, you know, reality is that healthcare will return, but not at the, like, just flip the switch and you're going to come right back on.
Right.
We have to manage the long-term COVID potential return plus bringing themselves back online.
Yeah, there are so many unknown variables when it comes to this. They don't know if there'll be a resurgence in the fall. They don't know if it's mutating to a different strain. They don't know if folks have immunity or not. There's so many unanswered questions right now.
Yes, absolutely. And we talked to the Mass Hospital Association, and they're doing basically three things at once. I mean, right now they're dealing with immediate crises, turning basically every hospital in the state with the partners in community health care and many others to basically one giant ICU or field hospitals for less security. So if you're severe but you don't need ICU, and that's what the field hospitals being set up across the state right now, they're preparing for trying to figure out how to reopen post-pandemic. And they're trying to help also project out when we should reopen, what our phased in reopen should be. There's an the entire industry, healthcare industry, as well as the scientists and the professionals at the academic level are looking at too, and when is the safe time to open. And we won't know. Once we hit the peak, when we start going outside the curve, you know, maybe we'll get some better ideas, but to risk reopening and then, you know, we have another, you know, six people in your community through asymptomatic infections, go back out, you could start this whole thing over again very rapidly with the infection rate. So, you know, we're very, very concerned because, you know, we could find ourselves in the same boat again, and all that investment we made now is phenomenal.
Right.
And I think people understand that we're putting a massive amount of investment today for all our safety. And to put that at risk to start this whole process over again would be debilitating for not just the economy, but also us psychologically. Consumer competence is very high right now, and we're all stressed out. On the education front, we lose a lot of the secondary benefits of education, housing, rentals, utilizing restaurants, bars, booksellers, retailers. So some of the college towns are really hurting at the moment. And also some of the small colleges do not have online learning. They're already struggling to begin with. So, you know, we may see more smaller college closings, smaller for-profit educational institutions that are vocational driven or high skill driven, maybe find themselves in financial jeopardy too.
Yeah.
Things like, you know, like mechanics, you know, you have to be hands-on. It isn't like you virtually learn how to do modern car repair. So we're cognizant of that too. So there's going to be some massive ripple effects. And I think you will see it, but you're not sure why it's happening because there's that kind of invisibility associated with it.
Right. Yeah. Can we talk a little bit, Tacky, about the Small Business Administration or the lack thereof? Apparently it's broke.
Yeah. We got word from our regional administrator, Norman Ng, that the nationally, the money's been dried up. It's about $350 million. Congress is working on other small business package just to address this issue. The number there was another $250 million-ish, but they're talking as high as $500 million potentially nationally for this. So they're still trying to figure that part out. I was intending to do some webinars with my colleagues in government to try to encourage people to sign up, and that's not happening. I suspect some of your viewers are having some experience accessing it. One, we have no money. Mm-hmm. Two, they have a lender that does not participate in SBA. And that is not your fault. That's not our fault. That's not the government, you know, the bank's fault.
Right.
You decide to use your lender because you trust them, they're your, you know, partners at the local level, and they're just not SBA lenders. So the banks right now are so challenged in providing SBA. Some banks are not taking new lenders right now. Also, they're trying to get through this current program. So I do understand some businesses are a bit of a bind right now.
Yes.
It's no one's fault as we're trying to kind of work our way and learn to do this, and the enormous stress it puts on all of us, including the industries that are trying to help us out.
Mm-hmm. You know, it'll put more people on the unemployment rolls, you know, ultimately, because businesses that may have been keeping folks on the payroll without the SBA help won't be able to, I'm sure.
Oh, that's absolutely true. And I'm sorry for that. Very regrettable. I wish I had something better to say. Everyone's doing their best. And that's all I can tell people. I mean, we're trying our best, and we'll see where we are in another week and what Congress tries to do.
Mm-hmm. Is there, for student loans, Tacky, is there a forgiveness program that's in place and ongoing?
No, there's no conversation of loan forgiveness just at the big level. A lot of the federal loans, a lot of student loans are federally driven, not state driven. As a result, you do have zero interest rate to end the year. Your loans are suspended to September. You can pay more if you want to. It is automatic, but I always advise people to double check with your lender just in case, because yep. you never know. And like I said it last time, if you're able to pay because you're not in deep financial trouble, you should definitely take advantage of the zero interest rate at the moment to try to save your money at the back end.
Yeah, that's great advice. Let's talk a little bit, if we can, about, I know an issue that's near and dear to your heart is Asian discrimination during this pandemic, and what you're hearing about that and what you'd like to see done about that.
Yeah, this has kind of been one of those things that the media hasn't done a great job covering for reasons I can't seem to understand still. Chinatown, there's been some Globe stories on this that was very good about the pre-pandemic in the United States regarding the decline in businesses because people believe that for some reason Chinese people are carrying diseases, which is completely false. Diseases are not racially made up. It doesn't follow a race or gender or anything like that. With this type, this is a virus. It's non-discriminatory. It will go to anybody to spread itself further. So Chinatown had suffered well into 70% decline. Quincy businesses also saw some negative impact as well, whether a hair salon or the markets. Now Chinatown is well into 90% decline. And as a result, you know, the many people, they're probably never going to open their shops again because they're trying to do next. Nationally, we've seen a higher degree of hate crimes. In Houston, FBI office has issued an advisory. They expect to see a high number of spikes. There was an attack on a family of four, including the children, by an individual accusing of them being COVID-19 carriers by race. Sure. New York City, even in the middle of their crises, attacks have occurred against Chinese individuals in different parts of the city by physical assault. Obviously, the national stage and some members of Congress are using this political fodder for themselves to sell themselves, which I find to be personally disgusting. I do not like that type of behavior. Congresswoman Ming from New York has filed a resolution that's sitting in the U.S. House Judiciary Committee advocating that we shouldn't encourage this behavior, encourage law enforcement to continue to investigate these cases and to stand up as good examples against this. Learning about that resolution, I petitioned my colleagues at the State House, and we would get 109 signatories to send to Congresswoman Ming as well as the House Judiciary Committee, reiterating our support that this is unacceptable. And some people think it's kind of funny or a joke, you know, using terms like Chinese virus or China virus, as we've heard our president use, as well as things like Kung Fu virus, Wuhan virus, and so forth. And internationally, that's why we call it COVID-19, to try to reduce those stigmas. The problem is that it's still laying blame on people. And, you know, you may find it humorous, or you say it's really accurate, but what you're doing is you're saying that you are the one that's carrying it. We can talk about international affairs if you want regarding World Health Organization, the behavior of People's Republic of China, but no one in China invited us to this disease. It isn't like a person there decided, oh, let's get people sick. Absolutely not. The governmental response is who we should be talking about, including ourselves in state government and national government and internationally as also. I mean, that's what a conversation needs to be about, what is the world response, not to lay blame and find better ways to deal with this, and you know, better communication and where those communication avenues failed on letting us know in advance what's going on. And we want to do a whole episode on that. We can talk about that too.
Sure.
But you know, we're very troubled. And WHDH yesterday did a story in Newton about how there was a Zoom bomb by a group on high schoolers in Newton that targeted in particular Chinese students with a whole bunch of racial slurs and graffiti. Mm-hmm. And so forth, and it went on for quite some time. It wasn't just one individual, it was several. People were actually, you know, getting into the Zooms at some part and doing verbal attacks. Obviously, social media, you don't have to look far to find things out there on the website, social media, and some of news media groups that are questionable. They're actually news media groups using these situations to promote their own agenda at expense of your next door neighbor, so to speak, that live with you here. So, you know, I always tell people, try to be a good example. don't encourage this type of behavior.
Right.
See, I don't want people to get into confrontations and fight with some other people. That's not productive. But like the virus, the best thing we do is, you know, we keep to ourselves right now to prevent the spread of the virus. But I think it's also very important for us to set a good example. And remind people we don't want to encourage this behavior.
Are you concerned at all, Jackie, with it seems to be that long-term care facilities, nursing homes are particularly vulnerable to this virus, and does there need to be some kind of a state mitigation to look into what happened?
No, absolutely. We're going to have to look at this. Massachusetts' rough estimates, 45% of all COVID-19 related deaths have occurred in assisted living facilities, nursing homes. Nationally, it's the same trend. It's showing the same thing. As we saw the tragedy in Seattle, it's now happening here at Quincy Rehab.
Yep.
There are cases in the Quincy Housing Authority senior housing. I've talked to Brookhouse, the Lutheran church organizations run some of the senior housing. I've dropped a line with the O'Connells checking in on their senior housing, and they're all taking very strong measures to protect their residents. If any residents senior housing, a family senior housing, we're discouraging them from going visit their family. I know it's hard.
Yeah.
You know, you bring them food, you know, bring them comfort. But the encouragement is that unless you're like a visiting nurse, we're trying to help someone with a disability that you know, provides that level of care. That's essential. You know, we encourage everyone to, of course, wear masks, wear coverings as you go near folks and try to discourage visiting. And that's how it gets into senior housing. Many people in senior housing are staying in their apartments. Kathy Quigley in the YMCA and Germantown Neighborhood Center are working very hard on getting meals to senior housing. I'm with a Quincy Community Action Program, Southwest Food Pantry is open, Interfaith Social Services is open, as well as Salvation Army is providing assistance. The Norfolk County Labor Council is doing food drives, and many, many others are doing their best to try to address food security, especially for people who cannot leave their homes or their apartments right now.
Right. Yep. It's disconcerting to say the least. And of course, we saw it hit very close to home with the passing of Sandra McCauley and the illness of Frank McCauley.
Yeah, I send my condolences to the McCauley family. And obviously, I've worked with Frank even before I got elected, and when I worked for Michael Morrissey. I've always had wonderful conversations with Sandra and Frank over the years. I actually last visited them back in August at Hancock Place, which is where they were residing. And I'm hoping Frank has a good recovery. I do understand he had a birthday in December where he turned 90, but not to put water or fire or oil on it, so to speak. I don't want to sound grim, but it is challenging. I'm going to be nice about this. Not be too bleak when you get to a certain age bracket with COVID-19. So I'm hoping for the best, but obviously we're all preparing for the worst.
Sure. We should also talk about the issue of domestic violence, Tacky, and I know I've talked to folks from Dove who are very concerned that folks are kind of quarantined now with their potential abusers and batterers and concerned about seeing a spike in that now and when this is over as well.
Yeah, one of the things that's scaring all of us on the domestic violence front is the fact that you're now trapped with your abuser. COVID-19, we're advising everyone to stay home, not go anywhere else, do essential services. But on the flip side, this creates a new escape situation for abusers. And if you're not just physical abuse, but emotional abuse, psychological abuse, can result in a victim being very challenged on, I'm using words like challenge because I'm trying to be polite.
Yeah.
You can use your own word in your own heads that's viewing this. But, regarding the individual that's committing the abuse and the victim, the victim mentality gets even worse because now you're more trapped. And we provide you with a safe line number that you can put on the bottom of the screen because I saw last episode you guys did that. It's actually easier to be reading it. I'm hoping people are able to get to a safe spot in their home. To even just get a small word out saying you need help. Quincy Police has been very good about domestic violence, as well as Dove, and we will figure out something to try to get people help. But there's a lot of stress going on. I'm feeling it. I'm sure we talked a little bit before we started this, you were feeling it too, and I can sympathize with everyone out there about the difficult situation we find ourselves in.
Yeah, absolutely. We will put those numbers. There's also the text alerts that the state has set up for folks who want to get information about COVID-19. And we'll put that up on the screen as well if folks want to learn more about that and get almost daily text now after the governor gives his daily updates. Those are updated every day too. So anything else that we should touch on, Tacky?
Well, there's always a lot to talk about. I think it's really about, for the topics we discussed down the road. I thank you to provide a continuum medium online. We do post it on Facebook timely as possible when you actually get it onto your website and to allow us to communicate to folks, whether it be audible through audible means on your podcast or YouTube, although I'm not looking so good on YouTube, so please use auto. Well, version, I suppose, because every time I look at myself, I'm like, wow, this isn't like being in the studio. But I mean, let's try to schedule this again. And, I'm not afraid to talk about other topics. As you can tell, I'm fairly candid. I am trying to be polite about my opinion. But things, check my website out about how to make homemade masks, why masks could be important. Don't leave your trash or litter around in other places. And understand as a personal responsibility of each of us to try to keep each other safe. This is a very unusual situation. It's not a natural disaster. We can visualize it. It's not a situation where we're running to our loved ones, our friends, our neighbors, or even strangers. We do a lot of things with strangers, and I don't think people realize that, to help them out. In times of crises, that is something that's substantive. But we're not in a substantive situation. We're in a situation where it's invisible. Where it could become a danger to each other, which is very concerning. Please be mindful. Like I talked about senior housing complex, assisted facilities. You don't know if you're going to be a carrier. If you have to go, carry a whole lot of extra precautions when you visit someone with immunity issues, immune disorders, as well as age. As young people around the country, you're not immune. The news outlets locally have been talking heavily about impact on younger folks. I mean, a 38-year-old died of this. Teenagers coming down as they came back from spring break in quarantine. They're miserable. People in the media, as we've seen in celebrities, have been impacted. Elected officials have been impacted. No one is immune to this. It doesn't matter who you are, what your socioeconomic is. This is a virus. It doesn't care. And given its asymptomatic nature, which means that you could, it's not pre-symptomatic, it means that you're already carrying it, you could potentially be a danger to others. So I know it's hard to tell people to do that, but this is truly a personal responsibility issue.
Your website, Tacky, for folks, what is that?
It's still www.tackeychan.org. So it's my name.org. We do provide some resource information on there, and we do provide a summary of the governor's updates. So I know the governor's been somewhat randomly putting his press conference on. We wish that he would pick a consistent time, but given the time of emergency, news got to go, it's got to go. Again, the text alerts are very important.
Right.
To help you with that, we try to post as best we can information, but we're not trying to flood you with like 15 consecutive posts. We're trying to space stuff out so that you don't feel like it's overwhelming. We do a press summary, so that way you don't have to watch the whole thing. We try to keep it to bullet points as quickly abbreviated as possible. We try to not repeat stuff from the previous press conference. Mm-hmm. We try to keep it digestible for everyone in public, because I know it's a lot of information being thrown at you at once. I'm getting a lot of information thrown at me at once pretty much daily, and I'm trying to learn as I go. And I know I'm getting a lot of emails of constituent issues. We're trying to move through as quickly as possible, but us and the entire staff are trying to learn the crises, learn about the health issues, learn about what we're doing on a national level and on a local level. And at the same time, trying to get back to people as quickly as we can. So again, we ask for people's patience. And also, please fill out the census. I know we're at the end of the show. I'm hoping you're still here listening to me talk. But please do fill out the U.S. Census in your home. It's very easy to do. And again, the counts are becoming very important. So we don't have to put door knockers out there. We can reduce exposure of people who are going to have to visit you to make the request for you to please fill it out.
Yeah.
And also, Also, a Department of Recruitment Assistant is open on Monday.
Okay.
I'm not sure if we can post this, but we are open Patriots Day on Department of Recruitment Assistance. They have over 600 people now trying to field calls out. Unemployment rates at 570 plus million people they're trying to get back to and do verifications. So I've been getting emails that they're having problems getting through and getting responses. There is a reason why. It's 570,000 applicants that are still working towards. They're trying to get through about 1,000 applicants a day
on
verification. That's the objective. So they're still working through Patriots Day as well as taking more intake on Patriots Day as well. They are using block numbers and Google numbers. There's a lot of contractors, people out there using personal phones. My staff is using personal phones. Please be mindful that my staff is using personal phones when you try to get back to us. They did not intend to use personal devices on work purposes. I know I'm different because I give my number and contact folks or text folks, but please be mindful of the staff. So normally I tell people don't pick up things you don't know and phone numbers, but in this particular instance, it could be unemployment calling you. Definitely please pick up the phone. You can tell it's a scam right away because they'll be looking for money out of you.
Right.
Information that doesn't seem appropriate. So the Department of Unemployment Assistance will not ask for money, for example, or checking accounts right off the bat because your application already includes that information.
Right.
And so that's
part. If you haven't contacted them and somebody's reaching out to you, chances are it's a scam.
Absolutely. And if you're not sure about something, you know, obviously email us with all the relevant information. We'll try to get it as timely as possible to DUA. We understand the overburden. Even my legislative contacts are overburdened because they've been put on the phone lines as well to reach people to get through the load. So, you know, we're doing our best with what we have.
What's the good email to reach you, Tacky?
It's still at tacky.chan@mahouse.gov, so tacky.chan at mahouse.gov. The phone number is 617-722-2014, 617-722-2014. You can leave a message of any of the staff on the voicemail. We do pick it up regularly throughout the day. My staff does include me on their phone calls, updates, texts, emails, so I know mostly what's going on. It's just communication's different. It's easier when you're in person.
Sure.
Talking to folks now, it's become this like 1 hour back and forth on phones and emails and Google documents and using Zoom. Once again, Zoom is not a secure system that we're using now, but we're not talking about anything sensitive. So that's fine. If you're Zoom bombed, just change the passwords. You may be abused that way, I'm sorry to say.
Right.
But if you business that needs to have secure information because talking about sensitive information, for example, you're an attorney, you know, attorney-client privilege, you shouldn't be using a non-secure device, and that's another financial burden on folks to do that. I was on a morning web conference with Mass High Tech Collaborative about security issues on teleconferencing. They fully admit that if you want security, you're going to have to pay for it, which is obviously an additional cost on all of us. Right. They are telling us also to be mindful of electric consumption of families, larger families in particular, leave the lights on or leave your TV on, streaming internet. And I was brought up, you're not using it, turn it off.
Mm-hmm.
Open your shades, get some vitamin D.
Yes. So
reduce your electrical lighting during daylight hours. Try to be mindful that you want to also try to conserve electricity at home. And the same thing on the internet. You're trying to use all the streaming devices like we're doing right now. Needs a lot of bandwidth in your home. We understand that the telecom companies are stressed, very stressed. I've had phone calls drop on my phone because of high load. And I'm sure I'm not the only one. And they've ratcheted up as much as they can. I'm addressing a lot of the residential load more than the business load because the business loads have different lines that aren't being used right now. So,
right.
And using your tablet and your phone like I'm doing now actually uses less electricity than using a laptop or a computer that you're leaving on long periods because the charging of it is much lower voltage than what's coming off the computer voltage or the power supply. Mm-hmm. So, some ways you can save a little money at home as well as, save the environment a little bit and reduce the load on the electric grid. and try to help out a little bit on the stress of telecom.
Yeah, the last thing we need right now is a widespread power outage. That's for sure. It was bad enough with the storms earlier this week.
No, absolutely. We live in the era of cell phones, thankfully. And, you know, we're able to get some communication out. I mean, as I remind people, I'm older than the hair lets you know. And I remember, you know, hurricanes and major storms where you didn't have phone lines and you're literally out of communication.
That's right.
We're in a better situation. We have technology. But like I said, you know, just be mindful of your usage. I'm not saying you shouldn't use anything. I'm just saying that just be aware that you probably didn't. You're using more things during the daytime than you do it at nighttime. You never realize you used. That's all.
Right. All right. Tacky, great to see you. And hopefully in person again real soon.
I hope so as well. And we'll schedule another time very soon to continue chats. And like I said, you know, obviously happy to talk about things off topic than just the State House and the local level if you want to talk about, you know, what I had for dinner last night. I know we can do that too.
Okay. Maybe for a different show. We'll have Tacky's cooking show.
That may happen if we go long enough. We're going to start running out of interesting content.
All right. Thanks again. Be well.
Thank you. Be well. Be safe. Hope to see you very soon.